This is Graham. He's new to PokerStars. Graham doesn't know it yet, but he's a VIP. He's entitled to claim points against any number of rewards in the PokerStars VIP program. From PlayStations to plasmas, from Porsches to seats at major on- and offline poker tournaments. You see, he started collecting VIP points the minute he joined PokerStars as a real money player. Because we don't think you should have to apply or be in the know to earn rewards. He'll be very excited when he finds out. Just you wait and see. Wait for it. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP and find out why all other reward schemes seem just a little, well, inaccessible. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's January 21st, 2011, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I am Chris Cosenza.
And I am Scott Long, commissioner of the new Poker League. No, I guess I was denied my application. I can't believe it, Chris.
Well, that's because they looked into your background.
We've been at this for five freaking years. More than that.
Almost six.
Almost six. And, I mean, what has Annie Duke done? Really?
I know.
What does her resume have that mine doesn't?
She's marrying Joe Reitman, or whatever his name is.
And what's even worse is you were denied chairman of this league over Jeffrey freaking Pollock.
What has he done?
Well, granted, he dresses better than you. But other than that...
I kind of like his hair, too.
He does have nice hair.
He's got that odd-looking hair and those thick glasses, too. Who wears glasses these days? I mean, other than you when you're going to bed on a road trip, who really wears glasses? Those Coke bottles, man. Oh, my God. I'm afraid in the morning, I can't even have you sit next to the window when we're on the road, because I'm afraid the sun's going to rise in the morning and hit those glasses and burn a hole in the side of my head.
I'm not going to have you disintegrate those of us that are visually challenged on the show.
Oh, and I don't want that to sound funny. It's not like we're in the same bed together. I'm just saying that there's a chance that the light would refract off of your glasses across the room and strike me in the head, okay? Let's make that perfectly clear. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
All right, we've danced around it long enough. What we're talking about here is that there's a brand new poker league created, Chris.
Yes.
And it's in the style of the PGA Tour. Annie Duke will be the commissioner of it. The chairman of it, who owns the company that's starting it, is former World Series of Poker Commissioner Jeffrey Nice Hair Pollock. And they just announced it this week. And here's the deal. It's going to kick off in August. They're going to have four free roll tournaments and then a fifth event, which will be a championship event, all being filmed at the Palms Casino. That's right. It's going to be on TV. And you can't buy in, Chris. And you can't just walk up and knock on the door and say, "Let me in." There's no password. You have to be invited, and they're going to do it to the top 200 players in the world, and they're using a mathematical formula that's very PGA Tour style of figuring that out, and that will not take into account online play, by the way.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So it's taking on the PGA Tour style. So does that mean, since Phil Ivey is a Tiger Woods of poker, he gets to sleep with like 14 women? And then get beat up?
Let me check the press release. No, it doesn't mention anything about that.
He doesn't get beat up by, like, his ex-wife?
No, nothing in the press release about that.
All right. Well, then I'm already disappointed in this league, I got to
tell you. Well, we'll see, though. I mean, it just started, you know. Maybe they'll grandfather some of that stuff in.
Oh, man. Well, the thing about this league, and for, you know, tell me if I'm wrong, but didn't they already try to start the PPL with Chip
PPT.
Reese's money. No,
okay,
not the PPT.
Yeah, you're right.
The PPL, and it never even got off the floor because there was no money And when that was, especially when the UIGEA came around and they couldn't find any online rooms to sponsor and give them money in the Venetian and all that, or something like that happened. But really, if that league couldn't even get off the ground, there's no money to be made in this kind of league format, is there? How are they going to make money?
Well, I'm sure it's all sponsorship driven, and you know they obviously have a TV contract, and so you know the sponsorships, I assume, will pay for the prize pool, and I theoretically would provide enough money that Annie and Jeffrey and everybody else that does work here actually make some living off of this. But yeah, that's a good point. You know,
Here's the other thing: PGA Tour stops succeed because they're outdoors, people. They can have like 400,000 people show up during a week. But when you're playing at the Palms, I mean, unless you're playing in their, you know, massive, like, you know, convention center, if they even have one, I don't think they do.
It's Vegas. Everybody does.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean,
even the
really,
Gold Spike has a convention center. It's just a janitor's closet, but that's a convention center.
There's no way they can make enough money from people paying to go watch them play. I mean, they're just not going to. So really, they're going to have point. They're going to have to, like, have a lot of sponsors and really just, just bombard us with, you know, every single logo and commercial and giveaway that they could possibly come up with to make it worth the sponsors' money. I mean, maybe I don't understand it enough, but I find it hard to believe that something like this is going to succeed. I mean, they had the U.S. Poker Bowl that was around for one go-round. You know, they had this PPL that died, didn't even get out of the gate. They had the PPT, which kind of lasted for a season, but that's because they had the World Poker Tour, which bleeds money.
Yeah, and only two of those episodes ever aired. They pulled it off the Travel Network, pulled it off the air.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. I don't know. I mean, good luck to them. I hope it works because I'm always for improving poker and making it, you know, much more accessible to more people and something else to watch on TV if they ever get a, you know, and it's televised. I don't know who's going to carry it, but, you know, I'm all for it, but it just seems to me like, holy cow, how is this going to even work?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Jeffrey Pollack has been very successful everywhere he's been. You know, he started out in the NBA and then went to NASCAR and then certainly made the WSOP even higher profile. So I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's a smart guy and probably has figured this all out and knows stuff that we don't, but we'll see. But a couple of interesting things that came up. One, Annie Duke and my good buddy Eric Seidel. Were quoted in the press release as saying, hey, this is finally something for the pros. You know, something to show the people that are winning week in and week out. This is a thing for them. All right? And then this a great writer that I've been starting to read more, Greg Blount. I think he writes for San Antonio. Had a story this morning that said, whoa, hold on, is Duke, Mr. Seidel. What makes poker interesting is the fact that average Joes can enter these tournaments and play against the pros, right?
I guess not for TV.
Well, not for TV, but what he's saying is, you know, if you want to take a fastball from Cliff Lee, you got to wait till he retires and then you go to the Legends camp.
Yeah,
but in poker, if you want to sit down next to Johnny Chan, you just got to come up with a buy-in,
right?
So. Are they losing some attraction for this by making it exclusive for it's just the pros? Now we say pros, but top 200 players in the world. I mean, that's a pretty deep list.
Yeah. I don't think so.
Okay.
Oh, because I think that this is more of a promotional thing. And just like, you know, every year when you're watching golf, only the U.S. Open is really the one that you could possibly find somebody who you don't know who the hell they are in the top. You
right.
know. But most of the time, PGA Tour, obviously it's a top, 150 point, you know, prize winners, and then some other guys get invited or whatever. But I think that this is more of a, hey, we want you to see the best that's out there. We want to guarantee it's the best out there, and we want to guarantee that you're going to recognize who you're watching on TV so you can root for somebody. I mean, there's nothing worse than watching Poker After Dark when they invite the Mayfair Club guys, and you've only heard of two of them, and those two get knocked out in, like, the first episode, and you're sitting there watching four guys you have no idea who they are playing poker, which is why I think a lot of things don't last long. Like the WPT that time when they had their little free league thing, and they had their show on TV inviting people from all over the country to play poker.
Right.
Nobody watched it, and that's why it's gone, because who cares? So I like this, that they invite just people we know, because I want to know when I tune in or when I hear about it, you know, that my favorite players might be on the show, or somebody I know, how they play, or, you know, something of that along those lines. I think that's what makes this interesting. And there's plenty of other tournaments for the average Joe to enter and compete against the pros. This is just one thing they can't, sort of like other televised programs. That's how I feel. I'm a TV guy. You know what I mean? I like watching poker on TV.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I hadn't meant to turn this into a TV discussion, but I think you stumbled onto something there. Is it more interesting? Because what Mr. Blatt was writing is, like, come on, there's like 90 shows on TV now. They're all invitation only for the pros. Do we need another one where we're just watching the same pros duke it out?
Well, the other thing, too.
Is it more interesting?
There's two of them, though, just before you. There's two of them. The most popular ones on TV are the ones that you aren't invited to, that everybody gets to play in. So, really, I mean, how many do you need that don't have it? You know,
I guess what my next point was, though, you've made it very clear that you don't want to watch a bunch of nobody's play, and I think that's the view shared by a lot of people. And there seems to be a small group of people, Mr. Blount invited, included, that don't want to watch his pros. So is the most engaging television when you have a mixture of the two and you have some underdogs to root for while you're still watching the characters that you've grown up and like and can root for?
Yes, but I'll say that with a tempered answer, because if there are 200 players being invited to this thing, you're – as an avid watcher or as a casual watcher, you are still going to see two or three guys at the table that you don't know.
Right.
Or don't recognize or don't realize, you know, are top of the world players or whatever.
Right.
So with that kind of a mix, I think you're still going to get that. And yeah, there are some characters like on World Series or whatever, but how many featured tables on the World Series have you seen that don't have a pro on there you know?
Right, right.
You know, so that's the whole point of having it on television is to, yes, we've all gotten past the point of showing us how to play No Limit Hold'em in a little excerpt when the show first begins. So we all know the game now. So now we want to just see the people we enjoy watching or enjoy succeeding or rooting for. So, yeah, I think that I understand what he's saying, but to his point, you know, there's plenty of poker with unknowns on TV that has a mixture. And I think that if you want to start a – and that's the other thing, too, is it's a league, right? It's a league. So, I mean, you know, you have – we have the right to
allow people in there. Maybe, you know? I called it a league, but it's – they're trying to model it directly off the PGA kind of and WTA.
Yeah, okay. So it's going to travel to all different places then?
No, it's always going to be at the Palms, but it's more of a – you know, I'm guessing that the – kind of the environment that they're trying to create is that players are going to be out trying to do whatever it is they have to do to make it in the top 200 so they're invited.
Yeah.
Which I imagine, you know, I'm not a big golf fan, but I'm guessing that's, the PGA, you start off the Nike Tour or whatever it's called now, and, you try to get, qualify for the PGA Tour at some point. You know, this gives an extra incentive for those average Joes that are maybe, the 201 to 400.
Let me ask you, does it update every week or every show, or is it like once you lock in your roster of 200, they're there for the season? Because that's the way the PGA Tour is.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I assume because these things are, I think they're starting in August, and the last of the first four is in December, and the championship, I believe, is going to be January, if I remember correctly. That there's not going to be a lot of changing in the rankings, even if they do check them. Yeah. In between the events. So, yeah, it might be just something where you lock in for that year and then...
Because that would suck if you're 200, get invited to one, have one guy have a better tournament than you, and then all of a sudden you're not invited to anymore.
Yeah.
And you know, so it has to be locked in, I think. So even then... So now if it's locked in, then you're stuck with those 200 players and you can't play. I don't even know when that whole thing would start. Like, when do they revisit the numbers and then
for
the next season? You know, but it has to be a league. It can't be a tour, because if you're staying in one place, tour means to go to different places. So,
well, true. Yeah, tour style. Come on, who woke up this morning? Put semantics in your Wheaties. Jeez,
I'm having fun, man. I finally get to talk about something that I like. but like I said, I don't know how it's going to survive they must have people lined up to sponsor this thing. And my prediction is it's going to be a one and done thing. They're going to do one league, 1 year, and it's not going to last past that. I don't know. I could be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong, because it'd be cool. I'd love to see it kind of even like rival the other big tours, you know, for the popularity.
I have no doubt that that's probably the piece of this is, you know, the pros of some of the old school pros, at least, have been, you know, hemming and hawing for years that the WSOP is just getting out of touch with folks, and they really want a rival to it now. Certainly the way this is set up, it's never going to rival it, but... You know, if it starts creating, I mean, really, I'm trying to think ahead here a little bit of how this could survive. If it starts creating some real interest in, you know, I haven't seen the formula yet.
Yeah.
But people are going to find the formula and figure out what earns them points. And since it's not online play, that means it's going to be live play. So, you know, it's going to probably, in some sense, I would think, increase fields in certain events. Or however else they do, and they don't take into account cash game success either, which it would be almost impossible to either. So
yeah.
It's really a live tournament kind of ranking thing. So you know, maybe some poker rooms around the country start, you know, playing up to it a little bit and driving more traffic into them too. So
I would like to know the formula, just because, like, you know how Player of the Year formulas have $5,000 events or. 10,000.
Right.
I'd like to know, you know, okay, well, now a small poker room here in Florida would like to run a $5,000 event. Does that play into these numbers? And, you know, I think this formula is going to be kind of skewed too, but I'd like to see what their formula is if they have one. And the other thing I want to say is I'm wondering what the over-under is on the Annie Up Binary Bunch starting a fantasy fantasy thing about this and see who's going to, you know, pick their top 10 players and see who wins the...
let me try my Magic 8-Ball, which is usually how I... most decidedly.
It is decidedly so.
And I'd totally be in that, BB. That's, see, I'm shortening it now. Last week it was Binary Bunch, now it's BB.
BB, okay. It's not Big Blind anymore, it's Binary Bunch on our forum. Or our boards. I don't want to confuse anybody.
On the
anybody.
Boards. Yeah,
on the boards.
Yeah. All right, well, obviously I've spent way too much time on the web this week, Chris, because I ran across another article that I thought was worth us discussing this week. It was a Poker News Daily article, and I got to tell you, those folks have been doing a lot of good stuff. But this was actually written by Lee Jones, you know, the author of my favorite poker book, the Winning Low Limit Hold'em,
yep.
Which I still think is probably the best limit book out there.
Yep.
And obviously a veteran of lots of online rooms. He's worked for Full Tilt, he's worked for Cake, he's worked for Stars. And he was responding to a live tournament situation. Unfortunately, he wasn't there, which I think loses a little bit of the luster when you're coming out strongly, in your opinion.
Yeah.
But it was something where there was a deal, and the tournament director ruled that it was a missed deal because the players did not get their proper cards.
This is online? Right?
No, this is a live tournament.
I was going to say, how did that happen?
Yeah. And that's part of what played into it. He's like, you know, that obviously there's things that will never happen online. Online has its own weaknesses, but one thing is, you know, the cards are going to get to the right people.
Yeah.
No one's going to pitch one off of the table by accident. but, you know, he brought up, in his mind, he says there's no such thing as the proper cards. He's like, as long as it's purely random what cards people get, it shouldn't matter. Now, I don't think he's advocating that, you know, a dealer just sits down and goes crazy and starts dealing to every other person and until everybody has two, you know, euchre style. But he said in this situation he didn't think it called for a missed deal because the players didn't look at the cards and they both got two random cards. So what do you think?
Oh, man. You know, it's funny. It's like I can see both sides of this. Because that deck has been shuffled and put into play, and that's the order the deck has been set to go at, and that's what we have to respect. So to me, if you didn't get the cards that were, quote, destined to come to you, then something is not right. Now, I know that in the old, you know, underground clubs and Mayfair clubs and old Dallas backhaul days when they had machine guns on the ceiling or on the roof, whatever. You know, they could always stop the play in the middle of the hand and say, okay, cut the deck, because they wanted to make sure nobody was cheating and all that stuff. And, hey, if you agree to it or if that's the way you play or whatever, then that's fine. But to me, I've always – and, you know, when you're playing in a game where people are known to just get up and want to punch you in the face because they can't see that you have a live deuce in the Binion's poker room playing Omaha 8, to me, I think that you're really asking for trouble when you tell somebody and when they're that anal that – you know, this card, it doesn't matter if you got it or not, or if he did, or because you don't know what the two cards are. To me, it doesn't seem right. It seems like you're screwing with what was meant to be. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to find the perfect analogy to make you say,
so
that's right.
You're a fate believer then.
Yeah, I'm. It's not even so much fate as it is you're tampering with. Like, why deal in a circular motion then? Why deal from left to right clockwise? As long as everybody gets two cards,
why are you dealing?
Yeah,
but we're
that
not
way?
Talking about, like I said, I mean, we're not talking about all of a sudden letting a dealer freestyle.
No, I know, but it's the equivalent of that.
We set up rules so people know what they are. But
that should
at
be
the
a
end
rule,
of the day, when you're making. He's clearly talking about decisions here, not
right.
Establishing a new policy. But, you know, if people have already looked at their card, some people, but not the people in question. You know, are you causing more damage to the hand by making people, you know, fling their cards in and re-deal than you are in just acknowledging that two people may not have the cards that were destined for them, but they have random cards and no one's looked at them yet?
Man, I don't know.
All right, so let me put it in a better state. Well, let's say you're in seat two and you have pocket aces. All
right? Right.
Before it gets to you in action, before there's any action, two cards get mixed on the other end of the table. All right, no one's looked at him yet, and the tournament director comes over. Would you rather him rule, hey, no one's seen the cards? No? They're random? Yeah? Okay. Hand proceeds. Or say, oh, sorry, that card, no one looked at it, but that card really should belong to that guy, and that card, muck him.
Well, that's not fair, because you're giving... Well, you're not. Well, no, you're not. Because if I had deuce seven, I would give you a different answer. So you can't say that.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. So
right.
Off balance,
so,
though. All right. So let's take the cards out of it. Let's just say in general, would you? I mean, there's probably a mechanical thing too. Hey, that's one less hand you just didn't get to play because now they got to reshuffle and deal.
Right. I.
You know, he didn't say this. I'm just extrapolating from what.
No, I know.
This is what he's thinking, and certainly what I think is, you know, come on, folks. Let's, you know, if the card's random and no one's looked at it yet, why does it matter? And I'll tell you, this came up in our home game too this week, and you guys probably didn't see it because it was a small thing. But you know, the table was hard to deal when you're on the ends, right?
Yeah.
And so people were kind of pitching in the middle, and we were grabbing our cards, and it was like an Omaha or a deuce to seven hand or something. Faso was on my right, right?
Yeah.
And the cards kind of like got overlapped. One card got overlapped and went to grab it, and he's like, is that your card? And I'm like, you know what? I don't know. But have you looked? No? All right. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
And I kind of got this look from Faso like, maybe it does matter. But he's like, then he doesn't realize, you know, it's a 2-4 home game hand. I don't care.
Yeah.
But in my mind, and if he would have said, yeah, it doesn't matter, then I would have certainly said, all right, let's just misdeal it. But in my mind, it didn't seem like a big deal.
Okay.
Because the card had never been exposed to anyone. It's just still random. You know, we're going to play our hand. No one's ever going to know what the other card was.
Yeah.
To know that, hey, well, if I would have got that, I would have had, well, not in this case, but another pocket aces, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I can argue both sides of it, and it's just that...
I'm not asking you to argue both sides, I'm asking you to tell me which way you want to go.
Well, I would like a misdeal every time. I would like a misdeal every time, if I'm being completely honest. I think that the deck was shuffled and put in that order for a reason, and I realize that when you're playing online, you know, most of the time, it's just pulling numbers out of the air, so, you know, it's still truly random that way, because there is no such thing as a, you know, somebody sitting there dealing the cards, and I know this is when Nick is gonna send me an email saying, "Hey, we have this technology," or I don't know. But anyway, I just would like a misdeal. If I'm in a physical world and I can literally see that these cards may or may not have been meant for me because there was a dealer who sat down and shuffled, and that's the deck. It's set. It's ready to go. And I didn't get the card that was meant for me, or I'll never know if I got the card that was meant for me. I just feel kind of weird, and I would always want the deck to be reshuffled and dealt again.
There's no right or wrong answer.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not trying to be difficult. You know, I just, I feel that's how I feel, and I, maybe it's irrational. I don't know, but I do feel like, and I feel like if I had some time, I could come up with another example in something else in life or in a game that would say, oh yeah, you couldn't possibly do it in this game. It's the same exact thing. You know, I just have to think about it. I wasn't really sure what we were going to talk about with this. So, but to me, it always feels like, you know, you're predestined to do certain things in life, and you're predestined to have those cards. And if they're not there, then, you know, I don't know. And it's not that that's a religious belief either, but I just feel like, you know, hey, those were my cards, and now I don't know if they were or not. I think that everyone got their cards that they were supposed to, and Scott and I in the corner didn't. We need to get the cards we want. Since we didn't, you know, that's how it should be dealt. But I know, right. It's weird.
Okay.
Well, what about you? You know, you put it on me. What about you?
I really, like I said, as long as it's random, I don't really care. Now, obviously, the probably the stronger argument for a misdeal is that if people start to get used to the fact that the house rule, you know, by house I'm talking about the casino rule, that particular casino rule is that it's purely random, it doesn't matter, then you're opening up the element of cheating again. You know, if you got a dealer working with you and says, you know, hey, don't worry, I'll misdeal on accident,
yeah,
wink wink, and they're not going to call it a misdeal because it's so random, even though I cut the deck weird, then you get into some trouble. But generally speaking, you know, again, this is just a random, every once in a while it happens. You know, I really don't care what two cards I have. I'm going to play those two cards. I'm not a big believer in this fate thing or destiny or, hey, the deck was shuffled and those are my cards. Because in general, it's going to benefit you one way or the other. I mean, sometimes you're going to get a better hand out of it and sometimes you're going to get a worse hand out of it. So,
I think the randomness for me is the randomness of the cards being mucked the hand before, the way the dealer picks them up, the dealer shuffling them, boxing them, cutting them, dealing them. That's the random. To that point, it's random. After that, it's set. Now, what happens after that is destiny to me. The hand is set. So there shouldn't be randomness
anymore.
Exactly. But you know what I mean? Like, okay, the randomness is the shuffling, not the way it's dealt.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, yeah.
And that's how I feel. You know, I've always felt that way. You know, the funny thing is that a couple of weeks ago, I'm at my parents' house and we're playing the way we always play. And there was a hand where my brother and my sister-in-law came into the house because my parents live with my brother in the same sort of compound kind of thing. And so they came over after dinner and we were already playing poker, my mother and my father and me. And so I had gone all in and then my brother had come over. And so I'm sitting there, I'm the dealer and I'm holding the deck in my hand and my brother was talking to me. And so we stopped the tournament clock and we're waiting while we have a conversation with them. So we're not really playing the hand yet. So as I'm talking to him, I'm just fooling around with the deck with my hand, forgetting that we're actually playing. And so I'm cutting the cards in my hand and everything. And my dad's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, what? He's like, you cut the cards. I said, well, yeah, but I said it was a false shuffle. I still put it back the way it was, you know, because, you know, anyway. So he's like, but you can't do that. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, we don't know what cards are coming now. And I'm like, well, now I know where I get it from because my dad feels the same way I feel, that whatever cards were there need to come out now. Yeah, and I was like, yeah, I know, Dad. I didn't fool the deck. It's still the same thing. I just I was taking the cards and I was doing the fake shuffle in the hand and stuff, but I never actually cut them and fooled around with them and everything. And he's like, oh, well, make sure the deck's still the same. I'm like, I did, you know. But I can see where you're in the middle of a hand. If the dealer start fooling around the deck, would you be hey? Or would you say, oh, that's perfectly fine. It's random. No, it's not random. The deck has been dealt. The flop has been sent. And now those cards that are there are the ones that are supposed to come out. I want to see what they are. I think, you know, it's weird. And I know that there's the other way around. It's irrational because it's still any other cards could still give you your hand and everything. But
yeah, you never know. Right.
But it's not meant to be that way. I don't know.
Meant to be.
It's kind of weird.
No, it's a good discussion. Like I said, I mean, there's no right or wrong here. So
yeah.
Another, you kind of mentioned the online here, and I thought this was an interesting tidbit that some of our listeners may not already know, but some probably haven't, but, you know, again, Lee Jones has worked at all three of these online rooms, and he says Cake and Stars use virtual decks where they're shuffled, and however the order is how the order plays out to the rest of the hand.
Yeah.
On the virtual deck.
Yeah.
Or Full Tilt does the quote-unquote lotto ball kind of thing where it's just they draw a random card from the available. Lotto balls.
Yeah.
If it's a flop or things like that. So there are two different ways of doing it. So.
Which is why I like playing on stars. I've always felt that way. Because like, even when I'm playing stud 8 on stars, when I fold, I like to know I made a good fold or not. You know, like the next card didn't help me. Yeah, I like to know that. I always, and when it's in, when you're watching it on, you know. And that's the other thing, too, is you can take as long as you want on stars to make a decision. And then if you fold, when the flop comes, you'll know that's the flop that you would have hit regardless. And so you made a good decision or not. Because if you take longer on full tilt, it's picking a number
you're right.
randomly.
That's kind of why I like playing stud. You know, if I'm in a spot where I don't know the next card's coming, I like the fact that I'm not going to have to second guess myself now.
Yeah, that's the other thing. It works the other way around too. Yeah, definitely, it works the other way for you too. When you're on full tilt and you say, "Oh, I would have hit trips," somebody can always say to you, "No, you wouldn't have hit trips because if you had played, it would have taken a little bit longer and it wouldn't have randomly picked
somehow
the
that
three
makes
nines."
Me feel better.
Yeah, so there's always the other side of the coin for pretty much everything in this argument. But yeah, no, I like the virtual deck though. I don't know. You can tell that's how I lean toward. I want to know that what was coming my way came my way, and what, you know, I just like that. I like to feel that way. It makes me feel better, even though I know it's totally irrational and stupid and whatever. But I like to feel that way.
Well, one thing, there's no inambiguity.
That's a pretty good word. That's a big word for you.
Inambiguity over is the fact that last week's discussion on positive EV. Situations that Scott is right and wrong. It's clear cut.
Man, we got a lot of feedback on
right
it, too.
I am right and wrong.
It's pretty remarkable how many people want to tell you you're right and wrong. It's like usually people want to tell you you're right or tell you you're wrong, mostly wrong. But we got a lot of people wanting to tell you you're both. That was kind of weird.
Well, it speaks to the matter that the fact that the discussion we had last week was actually a good one. It's rich enough that there's a lot to think about in it, which was really, if you go back to the original thing where I posted what seems like months ago now, that was the whole thing, was just to have a rich discussion. So I'm happy about that. And, Chicago Brian was the first to chime in on the forum. He literally posted on the forum, I think, before we finished recording the show. I don't really know how that happened, but he was already on the forum with his take on it. Our good buddy Lauren had called the hotline and let us know what he thought. But we're going to read an email from a listener that we don't hear from very often, Jared Hirsch, all the way from Santa Barbara, California, out where Three's Company was filmed, right?
Yeah, close to it, yeah.
Or Santa Monica.
Santa Monica, yeah, close to it.
One of those Santas.
Yeah, yeah.
And here's what he had to say. Scott is 100% correct. Great letter, Jared. Appreciate it. Thanks for sending it in. We're going to send you some great swag for it. Oh, I guess I should probably finish, right?
Yeah, I think you should keep going.
Scott is 100% correct. It is sometimes correct to pass up a positive EV situation in poker tournaments. It's a matter of math, not opinion. Huh. Take that, BB. And here's his example. In a $10 9-person sit and go, if you ignore the rake with a standard 50, it wouldn't be nice if we could just ignore the rake.
Yeah. Well, you could ignore it. It's still always going to be there, but you can ignore it.
I'm just going to click a button. Yeah, I'm going to ignore the rake on this hand. Thank you, stars. All right, $10 9-person sit and go, standard 50, 30, 20% prize structure. He says each person's beginning equity, quote unquote, the rightful share of the prize pool, is $10, assuming equal skill. Okay. Wouldn't it be also great if we could just assume equal skill, too?
Yeah, I'm going to assume you know what you're doing, so I'm going to bluff you here so that you can read into what I'm thinking and fold.
Yeah, I'm going to get in that 1,000-2,000 game with Phil Ivey. I'm going to click the equal skill button. Think,
imagine how frustrated he would be if he had to play on our level.
No, he threw the equal skill card. Darn it. All right, so he goes on to say, suppose a player moves all in on the first hand. Everyone folds to you, and for the sake of argument, say you know you're exactly a 51% favorite if you call. He says, guess what? You should fold. If you go out on the first hand, your equity becomes zero. But if you double up on the first hand, your equity does not become $20. It can be shown that it becomes something like $18.50. In this situation, you need to be about a 55% favorite to get your chips in, getting 1-to-1 pot odds. He says there are many situations with high blinds near the bubble that are even more extreme, and it's often undebatably correct to fold a hand you know you are flipping against, even if you're getting 2-to-1 pot odds. He says this all stems from the idea of independent chip model, first introduced by David Sklansky. Google if curious. And it was very similar to what Chicago Brian said, and then went on to say how I was wrong, that the situation that I was describing, even though I didn't give you all the details, I was completely wrong, which I'm willing to admit.
Okay, so I understand what he's saying, right? Because he's saying that it depends.
Just because it's plus EV doesn't
right,
mean you have to
do it. Just because
it's plus EV. But last week you were like, oh, yeah.
Right, but in your situation...
I want to hear the list of unless, Scott.
In your situation, though, in your EV situation, positive EV, in your situation, where you were in that tournament, you had to call. Or you had to go all in, I mean, or whatever. That was what we were saying, is that if you're shown a positive EV situation, in that situation, every right. time you need to go. And yeah. if you don't, it's not like what he's saying here where it's 1-to-1 and you have a 1% advantage. And then, no, in that situation, if you fold, you still got the same odd chips as everybody in the tournament and you're still equal and you can see as many hands as you want. It's not the same situation.
True. Very true.
But yeah, no, you're right and you're wrong. And I think we even kind of talked about that last week, that you were right and you're wrong, but we didn't use ICM as the reason. We used common sense.
And then after the show, too, I think we started talking about when we started getting these emails, just how funny it is that all these authors have these nice little
alphabet
acronyms
soup.
And theories yeah. with names and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sometimes my BS alert goes off a little bit on this. And here's my theory is, and no disrespect to any of these pros that write books, because, you know, we appreciate it and I've learned a lot from them. But I think what happens is these guys sit down and they know – intuitively how to play poker because they played it so long.
All right.
But they can't just sit down and say, hey, this is the way I play it in a book, because that doesn't sell. They got to come up. I'm sure the publisher's going, hey, can you put a fancy name to this? Brand it. So they sit around and they come up with stuff like independent chip model or ICM or M or all these kind of things, and it sounds pretty cool. And then people start going quoting, hey, it's the theory of the ICM.
Right. I like that Dan Harrington gets credit for M, even though he didn't come up with M. It was Paul McGrill, and it's named after Paul McGrill. That's why it's called M. But everyone thinks Dan Harrington – you have to say Dan Harrington made it famous, but he did not invent it. People like to say that he invented it. Even the pros say Dan Harrington invented M, and no, he didn't invent M. It's pretty funny. But M, I love that M. I'm going to come up with something for C. I don't know what it is yet, but probably the belief in destiny of cards. But that's going to be the C. The C is that you have to miss deal here because those cards weren't meant for you. So,
all right, my S is going to be the number of hands that you can fold before you're completely, absolutely desperate. That's going to be the new S.
Yeah, desperate. That's cool. Not out, because that would be the M. But
most players have an S of 1. All right, Jerry, we appreciate you emailing that great explanation to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We encourage everybody else to email their opinions there as well, too, because if you do, you're going to win wonderful swag like Jared has today, a great t-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys at pmspokerwear.com, and as we speak, we're right on working on a shirt that says Scott is right, and then in smaller letters, and also wrong.
I was thinking that it could say, poker is a pain in the S.
Pain in the S! Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, man. All right, well, we got some housekeeping to take care of. Our Apes final event is on the horizon. It is going to be Saturday, January 29th at noon Eastern time, and it is the ultimate 8-game mixed. Woo-hoo. Now, of course, there's a free roll in between on this Saturday. If you listen to us on Friday, then it's tomorrow. January 22nd, noon Eastern time, again, 8-game mixed. And if you happen to win the big one, well, you're going to be playing 8-game mixed again. So you better listen to some sort of poker show that's going to tell you how to play these games. I wonder where you can find that out.
Yeah. It might be something that we should do. We quickly change the course of the show. Yes, let's do that.
Yes, let's do that. You know what? Tell the guests to stay in the green room for another week. We're going to change the show this week to make it the 8-game mixed primer.
All right, well, we had promised that we were working on getting somebody from Stars to be on the show to explain home games, you know, their new product, and I gotta tell you, Chris, we're just getting flooded with emails and calls and forum posts and people knocking on the door, and They just love the fact that this new home games thing is out. So I had some more conversations with our good friends at the Stars this morning, and we'll have somebody hopefully on next week's show to tell us a lot more about that new product. And then I also got to mention that a lot of folks are saying, hey, home games, solution for apes? And I was like, I would love to, but there's a max of 50 players. So, you know, we've been reaching out to Stars, too, to see whether we can get any kind of a super secret waiver or something to that. Not possible yet. Maybe in the future. There has been... I did have a good discussion this morning with our contact about a way that we might be able to salvage the free rolls and make them competitive yet again. Of course, we know every time we try this, there's a flaw somewhere. But this one, again, hope springs eternal.
Right.
It's our destiny, Chris.
Right.
To actually have a free roll, whole season of free rolls that work well. So we're working with that. Unfortunately, home games will not work for apes this year, but we'll see what we could do from the NE upside to get in the home game. Home game. Game.
Also, you know, people seem to forget that we have a cruise coming up. I don't think we mentioned it enough on the show. So, you know, we are taking bookings, but only until February 21st. So if you're going to come play with us, you better join now.
1 month left.
Well, exactly a month left. And or you know what, though? We may stop taking bookings if we sell out. So, you know, you better first come, first serve. Better get there quickly. And, of course, you can go to our website at antiupmagazine.com/cruise for all the details. Or you can call Scott. I don't know. You have to give out this phone number. You might get some Russians calling you up. I don't know.
That's all right. I can say niet, just like the best of
727-331-4335. Give Scott a call, book a cabin, and play with us in March. March 7th, right?
Yep. Yeah. And then a final reminder that our ambassador program, we're still looking for a couple in a few states that we're in now, specifically West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New York. So if you live in those areas, play in a lot of the casinos up there, and want to be part of the Ante Up team, go to anteupmagazine.com/ambassadors and fill out our online form there, and you'll probably hear from us.
You know, we had so much news in the beginning of the show. I'm dying to know what you can come up with on the Ante Up news desk.
Well, have you seen that that stuff on the bottom of the barrel that you scrape off? That stuff is way better than what I came up with for the news desk.
I was going to say something there that was going to tick off someone, but I didn't. And I'm learning. I'm getting better. It's all part of this all new New Year's resolution, nicer Chris image that I'm projecting. So I didn't say it, but I have seen that person at the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, actually, I've never owned a barrel, so I've never actually seen the bottom of the barrel or scraped off. So I can only assume that it's nasty.
Yeah, I just look at my neighbor's barrel. I don't have a barrel either, but what's going on?
All right, here's what we know. Well, we have to settle for Phil Hellmuth on Dancing with the Stars, maybe. The Amazing Race has announced its cast for the unfinished business season, and sorry, Chris, Tiffany Michelle and Maria Ho are not part of the cast.
Boo.
Also, Poker News Daily reports that Survivor producers were seeking a high-stakes poker player to be part of the cast of the upcoming Redemption Island season. I love these names.
Yeah.
Redemption Island. But the new cast has been announced, and it is Poker Pro-less.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? Who cares?
Yeah, it sounded like they're trying to get like somebody like Tom Dwan, which would have been awesome, right?
That would have been wild.
And I was having a couple email back and forth with our good listener, David Bloomberg, of who writes for Reality News Online. And we were joking that, come on, are you going to find a high-stakes poker player that's going to spend 30 days eating crabgrass to win $1 million? If they can win that like in one hand online.
Well, that's why it works so well for Jean-Robert Bolland, because he's pretty much used to living that way. You know, begging people for money. So, but that is a good point, though. I mean, the EV there for them, even if they won the million, it'd be so much easier for Dwan to win $1 million in 20 minutes on Full Tilt than it would be for him to have to sit there for 30 days starving his ass off trying to outwit all these people to win $1 million. You know what I mean? It's just not worth it for him.
Yeah, it's pretty sick when he starts saying $1 million. That's not that funny.
He needs that.
But $1 million is a different story, isn't it, Chris?
All right. Well, now that Isildur One has ended up one of poker's most worst-kept secrets by announcing his true identity, It might have been a $149 million mistake. That's the estimate from one tax expert on how much Victor Blom may face in back taxes if the Swedish tax agency continues its investigation into online poker companies.
Ouch.
Ouch.
That's 149 seasons of Survivor, and you have to win all.
Only Russell could do that, I think.
Oh, man. You know what? We all have problems in our lives, right, Chris?
Yeah.
But, you know, when I go to sleep at night, I pray to the poker gods that my problem in the morning will be that my tax bill is $149 million.
He can always just live in America and not even pay it.
My tax bill is about $149 million more than his, or my income in my life.
Yeah. That's just incredible.
Really should have picked up this poker at an earlier age, shouldn't we?
Yes. You know, when I was younger, I used to always say, oh, you know, my kids, when they're born, I'm going to make sure they have a golf club in their hand. Now it's like, no, I'm going to make sure they have a deck of Chems in their hand or whatever, you know.
And a mouse.
And a mouse, exactly.
All right, finally this week, and boy, we're going to have more fun with this than I thought. It turns out that Robert Croke, the creator of the Silly Bands craze, is something of a poker enthusiast. Recently signed on to be a partner and executive in the DeepStacks Live poker training company. Chris, you apparently love the Silly Bands.
Yeah, what the hell is a Silly Band? I have no idea. At first I thought he was a musician. I didn't know what the hell. What's a Silly Band?
Oh, man. You know, I tell you, one of the things that I get asked when I'm out and about and you're not with me is, man, dude, Scott, does that Chris dude, does he ever leave the house? And I'm like, no, man, he doesn't. Except when he's dragged on a cruise by me or his wife. That's about the only time he leaves the house. And, oh, my God, how can you not know what Silly Bands are? You have grandkids.
Well, I mean, you got to admit, my grandchildren, although one is older, but she lives in Connecticut, the other two here are 1 and 3. They're not wearing jewelry or things on their arms and hands. I don't know what a silly band is.
Yeah, let's not get crazy. Silly bands are not jewelry. Essentially, here's what a silly band is, Chris. This dude, Mr. Croke, my new hero, by the way, essentially took rubber bands, molded them into different shapes like stars and fish and turtles, and made them in pretty colors, and sells them for a gajillion dollars each.
Oh, is that it?
And became this fad where you walk down the street and little boys and little girls have like 90 of these things on their arms and then trade them with each other. He essentially made a gajillion dollars, and I'm not lying about gajillion. It's pretty close to a gajillion, selling rubber bands to kids.
Oh, man. Never even heard of it.
Wow. Wow.
And wow. I mean, I've heard of Pokemon, and I heard of some other weird stuff that they did
Pokemon
in the old days.
Pokemon wishes he had a silly band. That's how.
But I don't know what a silly band. I still, even though you're explaining to me, I still kind of don't grasp what it is. So.
Oh no, trust me, I know what they are, and I don't grasp what they are.
So the news is that this guy who had this genius of an idea has now joined DeepStacks Live, our good friend Chris Tarina, and his company with Mattisau and those guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. All right. So now.
The lesson in this is that we have to find these guys that have gone out and made bank and a lot of things but happen to be poker enthusiasts and get them to invest nanny up. That's the lesson.
So does this mean now we're going to see Mike Mattisau wearing like a rubber turtle
at
the poker table in the World Series?
So. That would be awesome.
All right. Our hotline is 813-448-1120. You need to call it. If you call the hotline and we use the clip that you send us and we've never sent you anything before, we're going to send you something now. So, Dan from Spanish Fort, Alabama, you're on.
I got a problem. Well, I really got two problems. First problem was me and my son went down to the Hard Rock Casino in Biloxi over the, I think we went down there on a Sunday night and went down there because there was a 1-2 limit game. But we get down there and there's nobody playing. There's nobody playing cards. And so I asked the guy. I said, you know, hey, we'd like to play some cards. We heard it's nobody. He said, yes, 1-2. But we're waiting on a bunch of players. And I said, well, you got 2 sitting here right now. And he looked at me and he said, 2's not enough. And I was thinking, well, why don't they just set us down and then maybe we'll attract more people? I just didn't quite understand that. And I was wondering if y'all could steer me in the right direction.
Well, first of all, he has a problem, right, Chris?
Yeah. The problem is that the audio is too short for him to tell us what his second problem is.
You know, you're allowed to call back, guys.
I don't want him to call back, though.
Chris hates it because it's more work for him.
But. Yeah, I love that Dan honored the 1 minute and said, I didn't get to tell him the second part. Hopefully, they'll play the first part. And I like that. Don't call me back like Lauren always does, or Gundam leaves like 10 messages, or Zorag leaves like 100. You know, hey, you got a minute to win it, all right? So
minute to win it. I love it.
Do it, and if you don't, hey, sorry, you didn't do it. So, or if you're going to call back and make it all fit in a minute. Don't say, to be continued, here's part two. No! Right, 1 minute, that's buddy. That's all you get. So I'm glad Dan respected that. And, well, let's get to his actual thing here. Yeah, it doesn't make sense to have two people playing, but, yeah, they should have asked you to sit down. I mean, I always see that. Two guys sitting there waiting for the table to fill up, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a yin and yang to everything here. I mean, obviously on the surface, it's like, come on. You got two guys that want to play. And that's going to generate rake. Why not start the game? Well, obviously, you know, it's a labor-intensive thing to have a dealer there. You know, you don't know how the breaks are set up, how many people they have on staff. Maybe you don't want to get them into a rotation where you're going to need them for a game. Another game that's going to start with a more amount of people. And then you start a game and you got to bring chips over. You got the chip runner and all that. So there's a lot of work involved. And if it's a game that they don't think it's going to get going, then maybe it's, you know, they're making a business decision that it's not worth going with just two players. They might not even do it with four or five. I mean, we've been in rooms where they've had a list of 21, yeah, and they still haven't started a table. Now, that's a little ridiculous.
Well, but, yeah. the thing about the two-handed, too, is they're never going to generate rake. Folded, he gets the blind back, they don't get raked. Then they get through all the shuffling again, dealing it again, the guy folds it. It's not like a heads-up tournament where you know you've already been paid your rake and that you can sacrifice the deal. And the other thing, too, is let's say, okay, the two people agree to do rake because their friends are playing. They are generate some sort of rake, and the dealer just somehow, the poker room manager agrees to it for some weird reason and lets them do it. If somebody is going to join that game, that person may not want to play with just three-handed for a rake. You know what I mean? Especially if the rake comes out of three-handed pots. You know, they're going to want a full table. So, you know, just because you want to do it doesn't mean the people who are going to join you are going to want to play four-handed rake too. So, you know, every time that you're playing five-handed at a table and then it goes down to four-handed, or you're playing seven-handed and it goes down to five-handed, there's always somebody at the table saying, hey, can we get the rake reduced?
Yep.
So imagine what somebody's going to say when you're joining a two-handed one and you're telling them you're playing with a rake. They're going to be like, I ain't playing here until you get more people. So, there's a lot of reasons not to start that table. But there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to sit down and look like, hey, we're trying to get a game going.
That's true.
Yeah, that's what I was saying at the beginning of the clip. So,
and, you know, again, you know, a lot of this stuff, too, I think we've come to this point in our society where we actually truly believe that the customer is always right, which... Yeah. You know, I'm a customer a lot, and I'm wrong sometimes. So I'm not going to say the customer's always right. It's a little, sometimes we need to work together. Sometimes customers need to work with the room on doing things to get so everybody's happy. And in this situation, I'd probably take it upon myself as a player to kind of, you know, work the room.
Absolutely.
Find a couple of people that are sitting around not doing anything. Hey, you know, we're getting ready to start the game. Do you want to join in? All right, great.
Yeah.
Or get on my phone, my BlackBerry, and say, hey, you know, we're trying to get a game going. Get your butt down here. If you do that, then it helps.
Yeah, absolutely. Start game of course, going. He was in Biloxi, so if there was no game going on there, he could have gone anywhere.
Well, so that's true, too.
So that's the other alternative as well.
Very good. All right, Dan. Well, we're not quite sure, but we're pretty sure that that you've been swagged already. But if not, let us know. Folks, remember to call that hotline that Chris gave you, 813-448-1120, a minute to win it, and we will send you a great piece of swag like a deck of the J Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Antioch.
Don't you ever get tired? Tired of constantly getting the red carpet treatment?
Good evening.
Tired of having all your worries taken care of and knowing that there's a place reserved for you?
Right this way, sir.
Of course you don't. That's why you join PokerStars. After all, our VIP club awards over $3.6 million worth of major on- and offline tournament entries every month. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out more about why other reward schemes just don't open as many doors. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, Chris, we mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you count Saturday's free roll and February's tournament champions, the final three Apes events of the year, Vaunted eight-game mixed.
Vaunted.
The truest test of a poker player's range. Game's not only vaunted, but daunting to most players. Look at that little twist of phrase there. Vaunted, but daunting.
And if you don't play, you'll be haunted.
Oh! The cherry on top of the sundae. Well played. All right, but here at Ante Up, we never want any player to be scared away from trying new things. So today, we're offering our power tips for the eight-game mixed rotation.
Yeah, I like this because it makes you think on your feet. It makes you adjust no matter whether you want to adjust or not. You have to adjust.
You have to, yes.
I love that. And it gives you a good variety, and it rewards you for being an overall well-rounded player rather than just knowing one discipline and hoping to survive on that. Because I think there are enough other games that even if you were very good at just one, you couldn't survive the blind structure and the other ones without having to participate. So yeah. It forces you to be a pretty decent player at other games rather than just one. And I like that. I like that idea.
Yeah, you know, in a normal no limit, you got to learn how to change gears during a tournament. I mean, here, you're not only changing gears, but you're changing – you're actually taking the bike apart. Rebuilding the gears.
Yeah, it's a thought process that has to change. Yep, it's pretty
Absolutely.
Wild.
Absolutely. All right, well, we're going to go through the eight games and give you a power tip for each. In general, one of the things that you got to think about that is not really specific to each of the games is the fact that you're playing shorthanded in here, right, Chris?
Yeah, essentially you're playing shorthanded.
It's six-handed.
Yeah.
And so remember that when you get to some of these other hands. I mean, most of these the stud games we're normally playing eight-handed. The hold'em games you're usually playing nine-handed. But you're playing six throughout the whole thing. So, you know, adjust yourself in general to all your games to the fact that you've got fewer people at the table.
Yeah. You know, I've been talking to someone about playing poker lately, and I've been trying to instill in them, like, if you're playing hold'em and it's shorthanded, you know, you have to think that if you're first to act under the gun, you're not really under the gun anymore. You know,
right.
It's as if, you know, players 1, 2, and 3 have folded, and now you're player 4, or 1, 2 have folded, and you're player 3, or whatever the normal situations at your table. You know, if it's 10-handed and you're playing 6-handed, that means that 10, 9, 8, and 7 have folded. You know, and that now you have to play as if what hand you have now is that much more powerful because you have that many fewer people to get through. A lot of people will fold. Some people fold like ace-jack there or something, and I'm like, no, wait, would you have played 8-jack if you're playing 10-handed and it folded around to you? Well, yeah. Well, you would have? Well, then why aren't you doing it now under the gun? Well, I'm under the gun. No, you're not under the, you know. So you have to really think about it that way. A lot of people don't think of it that way, and that's how you adjust for, like, hold'em games and stuff. So, yeah, I agree, Scott. That's a great point. Six-handed means fewer cards out and more powerful hands come your way.
And then the last general tip I'll give, too, because for my short stack mafia out there that follows me into this, I mean, there's some strategy when you get short stacked in understanding the rotation of the games and what's coming up. So, not that there's any specific strategy, but remember you've got two split pod games here,
yeah.
And so you know if you can make it to them, you got a better chance of keeping your survival going a little bit to build up. So maybe you don't push the edges in the games right before then. And then you also, unlike Horace, you've got a no limit in a pot limit version in here too, where you can get the chips in quickly and really multiply your chips. So just kind of keep a track of where you're going in this thing and where your chip stack are, and that plays a big part of your overall success, I would think.
Absolutely, because if you're playing stud eight and it's like the last hand of stud eight and you have a stack that's shove or fold mode for the next game, which is no limit hold'em, and it's the last hand, then you look at something like ace, seven, six.
Right.
You know, or not even that good, because that's probably decent enough to want to get involved. But you know, something along those lines, like 2-3-8. Well, you're not going to play 2-3-8 in stud 8 because you're only going to win half the pot anyway, probably. So just let it go and don't speculate and move on, you know. That's kind of a bad example too, but you know.
Yeah, but your ships will be more valuable in no limits.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, exactly.
So just trying to think of where your ship's going to be most valuable. And
fold equity. That's fold equity, right? I guess. I don't know.
Sure, there's some kind of equity going on there.
Either, yeah.
Some kind of pluses and minuses. Yeah, you just got to add them all up.
Somehow we're both right and wrong, I have a feeling, no matter what we say this week. All right, well, I'll kick us off. Deuce of seven triple draw.
Love it.
It's a limit game.
Love it.
Yeah, we know it's weird. We only played it once in the home game.
Actually, I hate it. But
yeah, and it's because we were all just like so tired of trying to make bad hands because we do it enough with the good games. All right, so here's the deal. Arrays has more power in this game than in any other limit game. Since no cards are ever exposed, you can only go on betting patterns and number of cards your opponents draw to form your opinion on how strong or weak they are. Pre-flop, consider three-betting an early raiser to make it too daunting for the players behind you to stay in. See, that daunting just keeps coming back in.
Great theme, yeah. That's going to be my new band name.
That way, you're drawing against only one opponent rather than two or three. You'll also have position on them. And since drawing to a perfect or even close to it is incredibly difficult, you know, perfect hand, is incredibly difficult, a raise in position can force a pat hand to break, giving you two ways to win the pot. So position and raising has a lot to do with success in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. Position is strong, but you know, I think some people say, "Well, why am I going to raise with a weaker hand?" Well, you're trying to thin the field because you've got three draws, so you've got a chance to improve. And the fewer people that you have to beat, the better off you are. So,
yeah.
You know, in that situation we mentioned, if somebody's an early position raiser, which is pretty scary, and in deuce to seven. You know, when you're three betting, you're not saying, "Hey, I've got the best hand." What you're saying is, "Hey, everybody else, get out of the way." Even if this guy re-races me again, it's one more bet then, and I still got three draws to beat this guy. So.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not I'm only going against one now.
It's not like you're only going to get five community cards to look at and compare with your crappy hand. You've got a pretty decent hand, and you've got three chances to draw to get it, make it even that much better. So, not that the other person doesn't either, because the other person has 3 inches as well, but, you know, I would rather be heads up with somebody drawing than three or four-handed, so...
Yeah, and then your second point, too, if you're in position, remember, the people have to decide how many cards are taken in order.
Yeah.
So in position, it's not only just the betting of it, but it's the fact that you get that additional. I mean, that's so huge, isn't it?
Yep.
To know how many cards your opponent's taking so you can make your own decision. So, you know, if you're raising them, if they get a pat hand and you draw and you raise, now all of a sudden they have to give you credit for making your hand.
Right.
And if they're out of position, they may have to decide, you know what, hey, my 10 is not great.
Yep.
I'm going to break it. And guess what? You might have to draw one, too.
Yep.
But now you made them break a hand.
And conversely, too, if they're not even pat and they're just drawing with you, but they draw one and you have a 10, you know statistically you're a favorite against the draw. So you can now stay pat and make him have to make his hand to beat you. So position is huge.
All right. Well, let me. I'll take a crack at the next two, and then you can follow here. Because limit hold'em. Because I know you know nothing about limit hold'em.
I know. I hate it.
All right. Limit hold'em. Don't forget that this isn't no limit, Chris.
That's a huge tip.
Yeah, and I'm making fun of you, but you've become a much better limit player. But I know a lot of people out there are no limit players, and they just don't get the limit thing. So here's the thing: you can't bull rush people off hands in limit like you can in no limit.
Yeah.
So that means you're going to have to play some starting hands differently than you would in no limit, or maybe not even at all.
Right.
So, for example, in no limit, you can make a very large bet or raise on the flop, turn, or even the river with, say, a hand like pocket fours, and get a player to lay down a whole wide variety of stronger hands, just by the huge bet size.
Right.
In limit, guess what, Chris?
It's one bet.
When you raise, it's one bet.
Yep.
So people might look at you and go, well, hey, nice try.
Yeah,
I'm going to call you.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind with the hands you start with. You know, the thing that I giggle at most when I play limit, when I see people that are waiting to get into a no limit game and they're just frustrated beyond belief, it's because they play like small pocket pairs or some of these other hands, just like they would in no limit, and they find out that they can't push people off, and at the end of that, oh, how could you call? Well, guess what? It was one bet. That's how I could call, buddy.
I to give you an idea of what kind of limit player I've become. First hand or like second, first or second hand of our home game, I had what I think was 6-7 of spades, and it folded to me, and I raised, and I got two callers, And the flop came, it was 6-7, so it came 8-9-10. So I was like, wow, flop straight, but two hearts. I bet we got a caller. The turn was another heart.
Oops.
I bet and got raised. I folded. He turned over pocket tens, had a set of tens. So I folded a straight. Yeah. But I thought to myself, you know what? I can't push him off this hand. It is limit. Just let your ego go, and you have to fold the best hand once in a while. And I thought, well, he could pair the river and make a boat, so I still could have lost. And, of course, we rabbit hunted, and he didn't, so I would have won. But, you know, it's the same thing. You got to go with the punches and know that you could be beat, because one bet isn't going to keep somebody from drawing to their flush. And even though at this point this guy didn't have a flush, he actually had a set and I was winning, it was the move to me that I thought was the right move, because I could have lost to a bigger set. I mean, a bigger straight. I could have lost to a flush, blah, blah, blah. So in no limit hold'em, I could have easily pushed him off his hand, or we could have gotten it all in with my straight, and I wouldn't have to have worried about him having a set. You know what I mean? So I agree with you. Limit, you can't bully anybody, and you need to adjust to that.
All right. Well, I'll have Omaha 8, and that's the third rotation. So here's our tip. Drawing to the second nuts is drawing to a loser.
Yes.
Not always, but generally speaking.
Yes.
And, you know, hey, we saw this in our home game is too. One of our sharp home game regulars reminded us of this this weekend. He turned over his cards and said, hey, I've got the second nut low and the second nut high. Big smile on the face, right? And the pot? No, none of the pot went to him.
No, no.
All of it went to the other guy because he had the nut.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously this is a very twisted game. It's possible to sometimes win the high with a baby pair, sometimes to win the low with 7-8. But generally speaking, most of the time you need to have the nuts at the end to win. So the big tip is don't waste a lot of bets on the flop and turn drawing to a lesser hand. If you got ace-4 and there's two low cards out there, come on.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to hope? You know, well, maybe a deuce or a trade comes. You know, oh, yeah, great. Good luck.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe Santa Claus isn't, you know, is real. Just be careful because you're going to put a lot of bets in. A lot of times your draws aren't going to get there anyhow, so that money is wasted. And then even worse, they're going to get there and they're going to be beat. So, I mean, it's a lot of losing money. So, you know, play your strong hand strong.
Yeah, you know, I when we first started playing in our home game, we started mixing all these games in. I learned my lesson pretty quick that King, Queen of Clubs was not a good two cards to have in your hand, because if you make a flush and the Ace of Clubs isn't on the board, people are playing. The reason they're entering the pot is because generally they have an ace, deuce, or an ace, three.
Right.
And generally the ace that's out is going to be the club, and it's going to have another club in their hand, and you're not going to have the nuts. So, yeah, just let go of the king-queen combo hand. You know, the eight, if you don't have the nut something that you're drawing to, just let it go. Okay, in Raz, which is the next in the rotation, don't let your ego cost you too many chips. Yes, you tried completing with only one low card behind you. You had two kings in the hole. You were trying to steal, but you were called by that low card, maybe even raised. So now you have to be smart. You know, if you were called and then you both catch good on the next street, don't go crazy, because likely this person has four to a low now and you still have pocket kings.
Right.
Check fold. If you check and they bet, fold. If you both check and you catch good on fifth, but he catches bad, maybe you could try betting, but even then, if he's got four cards to a low, he's probably not going anywhere for one more, you know, even though it's a double bet on Fifth Street, still one more bet. So, you know what, don't let the bluff in your ego cost you your stack. You know, resistance in Raz usually means a good hand. So if somebody is fighting you for the pot, they probably aren't bluffing to try to bluff you later in Raz. They probably got the goods. So don't let your ego cost you too much.
Very good. Very good. Raz is that other. I mean, what I kind of like about the 8 game is you start off with a frustrating game, and then you get a couple reprieves. At least I think so.
No, with me it goes it goes good, frustrating, frustrating, frustrating. So I don't know about you, but there's only a couple of games that I'm like, yes, that we're playing. So.
All right. Well, you're our stud expert, so continue on with stud and stud 8 for us, buddy.
Okay. Well. Drawing is for losers in stud.
We're really picking on the losers, too.
Yeah, if you have the goods, bet them and bet them strong. With an extra round of betting in stud games, drawing becomes all that more expensive, so make them pay. Sure, if you start with three to a flush, especially three connected broadways, take a flyer and see 4th Street. But if you don't improve, and if your opponent did improve, get out while it's cheap and save those bullets for when you have a real gun. Make sense?
Absolutely, yeah. You remember limit games. We could say this about all the limit games. You know, a bet saved is a bet won.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to be really smart about when you fire and when you, and particularly when you call, which is kind of weak in limit. You know, you saved your bravado for the games where you can, like, you know, drop the nuclear bomb on people. You know, the no limit and pot limit. I mean, in limit, you got to be tack on. And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean you shouldn't make any moves, because obviously you need to make some moves, but you just got to be very selective about when you make your moves. And, you know, boy, how many times have we been sending stud games anywhere and just saw people, you know, you're drawn to the flush, and they go all the way to the end, and you turn over your pocket aces, and they're like, I missed. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, I knew you missed.
one of the biggest pots I ever won in my entire life was at the Orleans, and we were playing that 4-8 stud 8 game. Remember that game
with all
the old crusty salts that Fassett likes to call them? And I had pocket aces, and these guys were all going low, and I was just calling along. I was betting because it was stud 8, so I wasn't crazy. It's not stud. We'll talk about stud 8 in a minute. But, yeah, at the end, I had pocket aces, and I was like, yeah, I know I can't win here, but I was hoping to make aces up and a low, and it never got there. And they both of them didn't make a low, and, like, the only other guy had kings. I made this huge pot. So you'd be surprised. When you have aces, how many times aces up or aces will win, especially in just stud. So when you got them, bet them. Okay, well, speaking of aces, in stud 8, this is called the aces trap. Now, I don't advocate using this regularly because in stud 8, you know, it's a game where, you know, you're going to want to make people to split the pot. You know, I mean, you're going to want to make them pay to split the pot is what I'm saying. Right. You know, but if you have split aces, okay, and a big card raises, just call, especially, you know, if they raise ahead of you, just call and play it like a low hand. Now, the reason is that you're trying to make them think you're going low. So if you get a low card after that, be sure to bet out so you're keeping up this ruse that I'm going low.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you catch low again, just play it normally like you're playing low hand, because ultimately then you kind of are playing a low hand. But in the beginning, you make them think you're going low. And then if you catch high, they will think you bricked. And that way you can, since your ace is probably the highest card showing, you can check raise and get an extra bet in because you have aces and they're probably going with their kings. This works especially nice when you make aces up by Fifth Street and it looks like you were going low.
Right.
It's really a sweet move. So, you know, it's I wouldn't say do it all the time, and I would do it particularly against aggressive players. And I guess even people don't really understand the game well, too. But if you know you have somebody who's really aggressive on your right and they've got the gall to complete with a king when you have an ace showing, just call and pretend like you're going low and hope a low card comes so they think you're going low and then bet out.
I like it.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Very advanced. Probably our most advanced tip.
Now, are you going to go with the No Limit Hold'em here? Or are you gonna
of course.
Do four
I,
in a row?
I am our No Limit Hold'em specialist.
Okay, so. I didn't know you wanted me to do four tips in a row. I thought you were going to do the stud tip and we were going to rotate.
Here's the thing. Our listeners are like, oh, please, please don't let Scott give the No Limit Hold'em tip. All right, normally I would expect that and agree with that, but I think you're going to like this tip and you're going to see why Scott Long delivers it.
Okay.
All right, here's my tip for No Limit Hold'em. Make a sandwich, get a beer.
See, now you knew I wouldn't have given that tip because I'm a teetotaler. I was saying get a root beer.
You know, and I highly encourage you to get a beer because it makes the more you drink, the better I play. But you know, if you don't drink, still get up, get a Pepsi, get a Jolt, get a whatever, a glass of milk. And here's what I mean. No Limit Hold'em is the game in this rotation that most opponents are comfortable in. So they've played six rotations already of games they don't like or worse, don't understand. And now all of a sudden they're going to get frisky and they're going to try to build their stacks up in this rotation because they finally a game I know how to play. All right, let them.
Yeah.
Sure. You know, when you get your big strong hands, push them, play them. But if you're comfortable in most or all of the other rotations, there's just not an incentive to me, I think, to push the smaller edges in the one rotation that everyone else is ramped up for.
That's a great point. And I think it's an especially important tip for playing non-apes 8.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
I think a lot of people who play in our games, it's boiled down now to pretty much the players that we're playing with are pretty decent, and they all know how to play a lot of these games. So, you know, you may end up being the No Limit one. It's better than the rest of them in No Limit.
True.
Because there's so many players in our games that like to play all the games. But generally speaking, in the 8-game mix, if you're going outside of the Apes universe, notice how we're not the Nation anymore, or the Antiup universe. You know, yeah, that's a great tip. I think that, you know what, just take a break, and unless you got a massive holding, you know what, just go out, play your opponents in the other 6 games, because Pot Limit Omaha probably is probably not one of your games either then. But, yeah, no, great point.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those the sit-and-go tips, you know, let the knuckleheads knock each other out, because right. At the end, I mean, you're going to have enough chips that you can get those chips back. Let everybody else do the hard work, and then
right. Sit
back and enjoy my roast beef on rye. Yeah, Mackeson. 8-game mix, you know, I increase the value of my beer.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, Pot Limit Omaha, I'll read the tip, but it's really not my tip. I have to give credit to my great co-host. It's Pot Limit, not Pot Required. And the wise, wise words of my co-host, Savant, from just last week.
Did I talk about it on the show, or did I just write the column last week? I don't even know if I talked about it on the show.
Oh, I thought you did on the show.
I don't think I did.
I think you talked about it on the show.
I can't even remember.
But anyhow, if not, here's a tip. Just because it's called Pot Limit doesn't mean you always have to bet pot. You still can and should make appropriate-sized bets. Sometimes that, in fact, will be pot. But more often than not, especially pre-flop and on the flop, it's going to be less than pot. If you don't control the pot will control you.
That holds true for the Mary Jane version of pot as well.
Very true.
I went on this sort of little tirade. I've been playing a little Pot Limit lately, and people just keep betting pot. And it's like, hello, why are you betting the pot here when you shouldn't be betting the pot? If you're playing No Limit Hold'em, you wouldn't have bet pot on the turn. You'd have bet half the pot or two-thirds of the pot. Why are you betting pot here on a board of queen 7, deuce 4? You know what I mean? It's like it doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, I mean, obviously there are situations where you want to make them pay. And, you know you're not going to get quartered or whatever it is. You know you have the nuts and you want to bet pot because you think they're drawn. But still, for the most part, like you said, you know, don't throw away everything you've learned, you know, in regular poker world and just bet pot because that button is there. You know, yeah. Don't be lazy. Click it a couple of times and make the pot size correct.
Yeah, if you could make a bet that ends in a 9 or a 4, that's awesome.
That is. When you do the 9 bet, it gets me to do it. It's hilarious. I don't know why, but I laugh and then I do it myself.
All right. Well, there you go. Some power tips and good luck to everybody. Again, remember, it's this Saturday is our free roll at noon Eastern, always on Poker Stars. And the actual event will be the following Saturday. Also on Stars, that's a $5.50 buy-in, and if you win that event, you will be invited back to the Tournament of Champions the following week, which is also 8-game mix. So a lot of 8-game mix coming up, and best of luck to everyone, and even better luck to you and me, Chris.
Yeah, because the elusive banana, it's really getting frustrating. And by the way, that's $5.50, not $5.50.
Oh, that's true.
You never know.
I was just trying to scare people away so I could win the banana.
Yes. The viewer show. Yeah, it really is $550. Don't show up.
And if we ever do misspeak like that, remember you can go to our website at antiupmagazine.com/apes. That's AIPS. Has all the information there. And we'll see you at the tables.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
Okay, you know, I butchered this guy's name on the show a little bit ago, Chris. I was guessing at it, and he finally went to the forum and set me straight. It's Killy 19341, short for Kilimanjaro.
Kilimanjaro. The mountain. Wow. So it's Killy.
He's like a hiker, I guess. He is that or a lover of Sherpas.
Sherpas.
but he sent it our hand this week, and you know, it's the first hand of a tournament, and he finds himself in a tough situation, and you know, I'm kind of fond of saying it's not the hand of the week anymore, it's the situation of the week.
Yeah,
right, Chris?
Yeah.
And first hands of the tournaments, you know, you think they'd be easy, but guess what, sometimes they're the toughest things you face in a tournament.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, this came from a recent Apes CNLHE tournament.
Crappy No Limit Hold'em. Go get a beer.
Oh, I love how this is taking off.
Hey, I want to know, what's my S in this hand, by the way?
Well, it's the first hand, so you've got a pretty high S.
So it's still, what, two? I think the S is two here.
All right, as we mentioned, the very first hand of the tournament, an ace. Okay. Everyone has the 1,500 chips that they started with. Our hero, the Super Sherpa, is in middle position at an eight-handed table. He says he's played with a couple of his table mates before and thinks they're a good player. Of course, they're apes. Everybody's good in apes.
Yes.
The rest he hadn't seen before, those are the Russians. Don't worry about them. All right, it's folded around to him, and he looks down at 10 of spades, 10 of clubs.
You know, it's at this portion of the show that I'm realizing that we should probably just go back in time, get the audio clip from Danny Negreanu that says, after all, it's just tens. And then, like, just have it on, like, a little loop button that I could push during the show and have him just say it. Because we have tens on this show all the time, and we're always saying, yeah, it's just tens. Now, obviously, this is not the same situation as it was back in that hand of the week, but I just think I should have that clip somewhere and use it.
Here's the thing. Tens are probably, you know, I haven't done any mathematical calculations. I'll let the BB's guys do that for me, but I would venture to guess, and I'm interested in what you think, that 10-10 is probably one of the hardest hands to play.
It's just like Jacks, only it's the stepbrother of Jacks. Yeah, and worse. Absolutely.
For some reason, you have that extra numeral, and you make it sounds so much better than nines.
Yeah, I always think of eights through jacks as just death. I hate those hands. I really do. I mean, you're happy to see them when you're short stacked and you can shove or something, but first hand of the tournament, you're like, all right, well, I'm going to raise, but, you know, what are you hoping for, really? You know, a 10. So it's tough.
All right, well, you said, well, hey, I'm going to raise. So that's what you're going to do here?
Yeah, I'm going to raise 3X. You know, standard pretty much 3X. Plus, you know, I mean, what are you going to do, limp, fold? I mean, you got a made hand, and you've already gotten a few folds to you, so you definitely have to raise here. So I'd make it, it's what, 10, 20, so 60?
Yep. I disagree.
All right.
By the way, I'm going to raise to 59.
Well, then my S becomes 1, though. If I raise 60, then I know I'm shoving on the next hand. So.
No, obviously you got to raise 3X here, but this is what I mentioned about the tens. I mean, yeah, if you just say, oh my gosh, I keep losing with tens, I don't know how to play them, I'm going to fold them, that is not the best way to play tens.
No, definitely not.
So you have to, so you have to raise here, and then you're just tested as a poker player on what happens after that. So, you know, you got to learn how to play them, right? You can't ignore them. Ignore the bad things in life.
If you're first to enter a pot and you have a made hand, you got to raise. Unless it's a baby pair, you know, and you're trying to flop a set. But even then, you know, your hand's kind of, you know, it's kind of like you start getting aggressive later, they know you flopped a set. So, really, you're going to want to raise here. And they don't know what kind of player you are. They don't know how you're going to play this tournament. You need to be the aggressor in this hand with a pocket pair. So, I agree with the raise. I'll make it 60.
All right. Well, you know, you mentioned they don't know how you play, and I guess that's what plays into our hero's thinking here, because he said, you know, I prefer to watch a few hands at the beginning of the tournament before I get involved.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of the same thing, right? So, I mean, in a lot of ways, the last thing you want to see, if you're that type of player, which I am and I think some other people are, and it's not a bad strategy, is tens.
Yeah.
Because it's the hardest hand to play. You'd rather get aces or you'd rather get seven deuce in the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, so you can get the feel for the table before you get involved in a difficult hand to play. But, all right, well, he decides to raise 3X to 62.
To 62?
That would be interesting. But, you know, the 2 is not as big as the 9.
No, it needs to be 6. But...
Oh, yeah.
All right,
so he raises 3X to 60 also. And it folds around to the button, who calls. Both blinds fold. Pot is 150. We're out of position with our hand that we like, but we don't like it too much.
Right.
Flop comes 9 of clubs, 8 of clubs, 7 of diamonds. Start crying.
Oh, well, it's good and bad.
Mm-hmm. That's why I'm crying.
Yeah.
Just like tens. Pre-flop.
Clearly it's good because we have an overpair to the board, and now we have an open-ended straight draw.
Right, very good.
It's up and down. But it's bad because people tend to defend their blinds with, or not their blinds, defend their button with like a jack 10. He could even have sevens or eights, not re-raising. You know, so it's one of those coordinated boards that Plus, there's clubs now, so you're going to have to worry about the draws, calling no matter what you bet, and worry about a club on the turn. So, really, this is why 10s suck, and this is why flop games suck, because you're already sucked into a five-card. You know five cards already. Your twos and then your two and their five, the three. I mean, so it's scary. It's a scary flop because it makes it seem like it's great, but we could easily be beat. So, Well, I'm gonna have to bet. I showed strength, and I want to see if this button has something like ace queen or something. So, let's just it's like 150 in the pot. So. I don't know. 2/3 is pretty good, so that's 100. So maybe 100, 110, I'll bet. Something like that.
I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
I'm going to make a sandwich and get a beer.
Pabst Blue Ribbon coming up.
No, to be serious. I mean, boy, this is just like getting pummeled over the head.
Yeah.
With like a stack of money. You know, it's not a bad thing, but it's frustrating nonetheless. We start off, we're just getting comfy in our chair. We want to watch a couple hands. No, we get tens, the hardest hand to play.
Yeah.
Make our raise. We get somebody to call. Daggone it. All right, fine. We get a flop now that is fairly good for our hand, but we know it's going to be very hard to get away from this hand now. We got the overpair, like you said. We got the up and down straight draw, but we're out of position. Man, this is one tough situation after another, and the first hand.
I know.
It's just so unfair.
I know.
But you're right. You got to bet. You can't just you can't make that sandwich yet. So, but yeah, and then worse, as we're talking about, this is the first hand of the tournament, so we're not talking about a lot of chips in the pot right now.
Right.
Versus how much we have in our stacks. So this is what I think I struggle with. A lot of people struggle with. You know, there's no bet here other than something ridiculous. That's going to protect your hand.
Right.
You know, we're talking, a third, maybe it should be 100, 110. I totally agree. I would bet 100 here, but that 100 is just not going to protect your hand. And most times in a tournament like this with 1,500 chips, people are going to be like, it's like a buck.
Right.
And then we're sucked in on the turn.
Right. It's not going to protect your hand, but it's going to get lesser hands to fold if they have, say, ace-queen or ace-jack or...
Hopefully.
You know what I mean? Yeah, or fours or something. So... Yeah, that's the reason to bet here is to get a worse hand to fold. If they call, then they have something to work with. I don't know if you could really put them on hands here because it's such a coordinated board, and it's the first hand of the tournament, so it's hard to really do ranges at this point. But I would say that a bet of 100 will get an inferior hand to fold that isn't paired, but you could be looking at a raise too, and then what do you do? So, yeah, I'm still betting 100 or so and seeing what happens.
Okay, well, our hero puts in a bet of 80, a little smaller than we would have, but to be honest, the extra 20 I don't think makes a big difference.
Yeah.
You could be wrong.
Yeah, I know. I mean, look at it this way. If he bet 70, he'd be given the flush draw, the perfect odds to call.
That's true. That's true.
So 80 is still kind of closer. So that's why I would bet toward 100, 110, just so that at least you're making them make a mistake if they do call.
Okay, and then I think his next comment is very telling here. At this point, he puts his opponent on ace-king, ace-queen, ace-jack, or a smaller pair.
Oh, the button called?
The button called, yes.
Okay, all right.
Because he doesn't think the opponent has a set or an overpair. Now, if I'm the button and I have a set, I think, unless you're a real tricky player, you're going to raise there and protect your hand.
Yeah.
And same with an overpair, I would think. I would like to put him for a test, right? So... I think he's, again, it could be a tricky player, but I think that's a reasonable elimination. Now, I'm not sure about the hands that he did put him on. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, ace-king, ace-queen, ace-jack, small pair I don't think call, to be honest. I don't think those hands call, regardless of how small his 80 unit bet was. I don't think they call. I think they fold. I think that this person has some sort of draw at this point or made hand already, and... If it's like the Jack 10 of clubs, oh no, we had a ton of clubs, right? So if it's like, Jack 10 with a Jack of clubs, or it could be Ace 9, it could be Ace 7 of clubs. Who knows what this guy's, it's the first hand. So I can't put him on Ace King, Ace Queen, or Ace Jack unless they're clubs.
Right.
And then a smaller pair, I definitely don't put him on because I'm showing strength. And after that flop, if you're playing a small pair like that on the button, you're trying to make it. So you hit a set. And if they have a smaller pair and they don't have a set, then I don't think they're calling a bet here. So
Yeah, there's definitely a wide variety of hands if you're the button that you need to be raising with here, I would think. So this is one of those weird situations where we're out of position, but I think we get a lot of information on the hand just by the fact that he calls. Of course, it's the first hand, so you don't know how this player is. But
right.
But it really does, to me, narrow it down. I mean, I really have to think it's a draw, maybe a made straight, but even a made straight, I think, might try to put some money in here to protect against the flush draw. I mean, of course, we're only up against one opponent, so maybe you don't want to get too crazy on the first hand. But to me right now, it smells to me like a straight draw or probably more likely a flush draw.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I think that the next card is could just kill us, and I can't put him on the hands he put him on. I don't think those are the hands he has. So the only small pair I can put him on, if it was going to be a small pair, is pocket sixes, because then he's open-ended with a small pair.
Right.
You know, of course, it's the bad end, the ignorant end, but still yeah. It is still an open-ended straight draw. If somebody raises under the gun.
Yeah, I'd feel comfortable if I made that straight with a six.
Yeah, yeah. If somebody raises kind of early on or whatever in the hand, you don't put them on Jack-10. You put them on a bigger pair. So right. Or a bigger ace. So, yeah, I would be comfortable with a six pocket sixes here. So that's the only small pair I could put him on if I have to agree with Keeley here. So, all right, well, so we got a bet of 80 and a call. So the pot is what?
310.
310, okay.
And the turn is the 5 of clubs. So our board now is the 9 of clubs, 8 of clubs, 7 of diamonds, 5 of clubs. So we complete the club draw, and if our opponents were on those pocket sixes, they completed their draw as well, too.
Oof.
And we, of course, are first to act.
Oof. This is why you hate tens. I can't bet here. I can't bet here. I could try. If it was a limit, I would bet.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's no limit, and I feel like, I've already committed, 140. I've already committed at least 10% of my stack to this hand. I don't know if I want to commit any more here. I mean, I think you could try to represent the flush, but it seems to me that if the information you're finding out from the calls that you probably are beat now, or you don't know where you stand in this hand, so how confident can you be betting? So I think I'd have to check here, which probably is very ABC, but it's the first hand of the tournament. I can't tell what this player plays like, so
right.
I have to check.
All right, now, I'm going to keep harping on this, but I think it's just amazing. We started off pre-flop, first term hand of the tournament with 10s, a difficult hand to play. We flop an open-end straight draw with our 10s being overpair, very difficult to play. And now a third club comes, and guess what we have in our hand, Chris? A club.
One club, yeah.
It's just like, wow. It's just like, oh, it's just too good to give up on, but not good enough to really be excited about. And, it's just rough.
Well, here's the thing, too, Scott, though. Let me look at it this way. If somebody's made their flush draw already, the only clubs that are out that are worse than our 10 of clubs is, like, the 7 of clubs, the 6 of clubs,
right,
and the deuce, tray, 4 of clubs. And I don't think they're calling a raise preflop with any combination of those clubs, really, unless maybe the 6, 7 of clubs, because now they've had an open-ended straight draw, they have a pair, and they have a flush draw. 6, 7 of clubs maybe is the only hand that we conceivably could beat with a river club. So
well, no, we couldn't actually, because they would have a straight flush right now.
A river club that doesn't give
I see. I got
5 of clubs. Yeah, you know what I mean? Right. If you had 6, 7. So
right.
No, actually, yeah, the 5 of clubs on the turn would give them a 6, 7 of clubs, would give them a straight flush. So even then, I don't think this guy's going to raise us. If you know what I mean? Either way, you're going to get screwed. So I can't count on the 10 of clubs as the card that's going to win. So that proves my point even more. They did have 6, 7 of clubs. A river club won't win the hand for you. And then if they wouldn't have worse clubs than that. So they're not going to have 3, 4 clubs here. So I don't even count the 10 of clubs as an out for me. So I'm just really disgusted with this hand and checking.
All right, well, here's the thing. If you're in position, you can check here to control the pot. Right. We're out of position, though, so we can check, but we can't control the pot. Our opponent could put a bet in. So so this is what was going through Kelly's mind. He's like, I don't like this card very much. All right, we agree. He says he doesn't think his opponent has a 6, so he hasn't hit it straight. Yeah, maybe, but probably not.
Yeah, he could have 6s, though.
Could have pocket 5s, but I doubt this. I would probably doubt that as well, too, because they probably would have folded the 5s to a C-bet, he says. He says, I'm out of position, always have trouble with this decision, but if I check, I learn nothing, and if he bets, I have a difficult decision to make. Whew.
Well, here's the thing, though, is that if you go back one step further, he did say something about he puts his opponent on a smaller pair.
Right.
So there is no smaller pair than sixes, fives, four threes, or deuces, and he obviously said that he wouldn't put them on fives. So if you wouldn't put them on fives, clearly you didn't put them on fours or threes, so he couldn't have put them on a smaller pair then.
Yeah.
Right? So, and then if he says he doesn't think he has sixes, then how did he put them on a smaller pair just a second ago? So I really don't think he put them on a smaller pair in this situation. And if he did, I think he forgot about it on the turn. But you're right. I don't think pocket fives are in this hand. Pocket sixes is a very good possibility here. And then, of course, something like ace ten of clubs or ace jack of clubs or something is a possibility too. So I don't know what this guy's going to have, but I can't bet. I can't bet here.
Yeah, you know, I get beat up a lot for being so passive in this game, but this is one of the situations. I'm out of position. It's a first hand of the tournament. I've only, you said 10%, but I've only put 10% of my stack in. I still have, you know, a little bit more, what, a little less than 1,400.
Right.
You know, another hand coming. This is not the hand that I really want to start my tournament
out. You don't want to go to war with the hand where it's such, you know, confrontation and you know, information that you don't know. You know, I mean, there's so many different hands that beat you here that you don't want to lose your whole stack or half of your stack on this hand. So I agree. I have to check.
Yeah. And you know, the check, it sounds weak, and you're right, you're not going to get any information. But guess what? Your opponent might check behind. He may not have a hand.
Yeah.
And you might actually be able to get the showdown with a smaller amount and try to fund. So, I mean, just because you're checking doesn't mean automatically that your opponent's going to bet and then you're going to be put to a test. You know, he might check.
Yeah, there's definitely showdown value with an overpair.
Yep.
You know, and again, he may not have the clubs, and you may make your straight on the end. So, you know, a jack could come or a six. So I don't advocate betting here. But
yeah, I'm going to check with you. Our hero decides to fire off another bet of 180, and the button calls.
Hmm. God, it seems like a...
All right, just to me, a call at this
again.
Point,
yeah,
just
yeah.
a call, I think, you know, made flush. There's really nothing that's going to hurt him.
Yeah.
On the next card, I mean, really, it's almost impossible to put us on two pair where we could improve to a boat.
Or a set.
Or even a set, right, and improve to a boat. So at this point, there's no other card that could come that really could hurt us unless, you know, we have, as we mentioned, one of the straight flush clubs. I'm not gonna raise now if I got the made flush.
No,
I'm just gonna call and see if he fires again. If he doesn't fire again in the river, that's all right. I get to act last. I'm gonna put a bet in there.
Exactly. I can't
I raise him and scare him off now. Yeah,
180 is just, you're just asking for trouble. That's like 180 you can just kiss goodbye. And now that he's just called, you know, that means that you know, you could have checked there and maybe gotten him a check, you know. You don't know what this guy has.
Probably. You know. And if I had the flush there, I might have checked there. Even if he checked, you know, and tried to get my money on the river.
Yeah. You never know what would have happened. I would not have risked another 180 in this pot. It's a good amount to bet if you're going to bet. It's about the right amount, but I don't like betting.
But it doesn't accomplish anything.
No.
Let's go back. I mean, he was saying, you know, hey, if I check, I learn nothing. Well, I don't think you're learning anything at all by this bet.
Yeah, no.
If you bet and you raise, then yeah, you just threw this 180 away because you're probably going to have to fold. So now it costs you 180 to get the information, and he could quite easily be bluffing you there and bluffing you out of it. And so I don't think you're learning anything by betting here either.
No,
might as well save those chips. I'm going to learn just as much by checking.
Right. I agree.
All right. Well, the button calls, the river is the deuce of clubs. So our final board is the nine of clubs, eight of clubs, seven of diamonds, five of clubs, deuce of clubs, four clubs out there, which means we've improved, quote unquote, to a flush.
Yeah. 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 I don't think that, like I think we said before, too, is if the guy had a club in his hand, it's not going to be the six or the five or the four. Or the three. So I'm pretty sure that if he has a club, we're beat. And I think we're beat before the two clubs anyway. And I don't think
let me throw a different hand in here that I didn't think about. What about the ace of clubs, nine of something else?
Yeah, no, that's
legitimate hand, right?
Legitimate hand. But the thing is, though, is would they have just called on the flop? Or would they have raised on the flop with probably that coordinated board raised, with ace 9? I don't know. I mean,
certainly would have called on the turn, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or even a king 9 or something like that. I'm not saying people would play that, but it's first hand of the tournament. It's $5 tournament. You never know.
Yeah, when it first started, I was thinking ace 9, and I was thinking like a 9 might come up again or something and really put us to a test. But
regardless, it goes back to what you're saying, that our club is probably not good here.
Right, our club isn't good. You know, even like I said too, was even Jack 9, or Jack 9 with a Jack of clubs or something. So you never know what somebody's going to call in the first hand of a tournament in the button.
That's true.
You know, anything could happen. So again, I just don't see us having the best club here. If there's a flush out, I'd be happy to just show down now that I have a 10 high flush.
Yep.
If I can, but I'm not betting again. That's for sure.
All right. Well, our hero says it's the dreaded fourth club. He's really confused now. Has a flush, but only 10 high. He had put his opponent on ace plus something, probably another high card, and there are four clubs that beat him, which we've all talked about. He says, if I check, I basically give up the hand. He thinks the only way he can win the pot is to bet. So he puts another bet of 180 in. Wow. Trying to limit my investment at the same time, hoping it looks like enough of a value bet to convince my opponent that I have him beat. What do you think?
No, I disagree. Because here's why I disagree. First of all, he's put his opponent on ace something, okay? So it could easily be the ace of clubs. And if he says it, you said probably another high card, right? So one of those cards is probably bigger than your 10. So, all right, so now there's four clubs. That means that he could be beat by any club higher than his.
Right.
And then when he says the only way you could win is to bet, I don't agree. If you're going to bet and you're beat by a better hand, you're going to be raised. If you're going to check and then they check behind you, you have the best hand and can win that way.
Yeah.
So the only way to win is not to bet. The only way to win is to check. Now, let's say you bet here and then he raises you.
Within.
Now, yeah, what do you do? But if you had checked and then you bet the amount that you were just thinking about betting, you might feel more comfortable calling that amount. And then getting to see it for a cheaper price. So I don't think betting here is the right decision.
Yeah, I think the betting is the absolute worst thing we can do here.
Yeah, no, I think you need to check.
Just
and
check
then,
and hope to see it down. And you're right, you know, he could put out, if he's got the flush, more than likely he's going to put a value bet out, he or she. Not a big bet. Because he's going to want us to call, and we'll call, and we'll see it, you know?
Yeah, and if he has a club, it's clearly going to be one that's bigger than ours. I mean, I can't think of any hand that has a lower club in it that would bet here. I can't think of any hand unless it's the straight flush, and then that's the only hand I could think of. So, and then again, you're beat. So, I don't know. Betting here is just bad. If you bet and you get raised, then what? You know, and you could have called for the amount that he probably would have bet into you if you had just checked. So I don't like betting at all.
All right. Well, you asked for a raise, Chris, and you're going to get a raise.
Of course.
Button raises 700 to 880. Our hero says this is the first hand of the tournament, for heaven's sake. Some of them say Darwin's sake, but that's
Darwin's sake. Well, there could be a heaven without a god, no?
That's true. Let's not get off track.
Now. No. Yeah.
He says if he makes the crying call, he's down to 300 chips and just about through. That's not true. You've got an S of about 14. the only thing I'm going to say that I think is interesting is the amount of the raise.
Yeah, it's a big
raise. I'm trying to put myself on, if I had the ace of clubs, to be honest, any other club at this point.
Yeah,
because there's a reasonable case to be made that my opponent has the ace of clubs because he's been the aggressor the whole way.
Right.
Why am I raising 700?
The only thing I could come up with is the online overbet that they do when they have the nuts and they're trying to make you think they're bluffing. The guy could have the straight flush hoping to God because you raised preflop and showed aggression the whole way that you had ace of clubs. King of clubs, you know, or something like
that. And the fact that you bet out on the river, too, I mean, I would think, I guess that's the reasoning, too.
Yeah, he's sending a signal that I have a high enough club here to bet out. So this guy's thinking, okay, you think you have a high king of clubs, or
he's not going to be able to fold it.
You can't fold it, so I'm betting a ton here. So that's why the big bet, I think.
All right, well, obviously I'm going to go on a limb and say you're going to fold, Chris, right?
Yeah, I'm letting it go now. That's terrible.
And I would have folded too. And so our hero curses the river and folds, leaving himself $1,000, not yet crippled, but still enough to be able to play. Sure. You know, that's an S40.
Man, Scott can milk that for like four hours.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I can order pizza and have it come before I run out of chips for that. So he doesn't really know, obviously, because he folded, so he doesn't know what happened. But
oh, man. All right, well, we're going to put him on a higher club here. Or I'm going to say, if I had to go out on a limb, I'm going to go with, like you said, maybe the ace of clubs, nine of hearts, or something like that. Or maybe jack 10 with a jack of clubs, and they already flopped a straight. And rivered jack of clubs. But that big bet in the end, I don't think he would do that with jack of clubs. So I'm going to say ace of clubs, nine of hearts, and let our Killie feel better about that he folded the worst hand.
Yeah, I think he probably saved himself some chips. He could have saved him a lot more by playing a little differently. But
yeah, it could have been ace king of clubs, too. It could have been anything.
Absolutely.
It could have been ace king of clubs. It's the only – or ace queen of clubs or ace jack of clubs. So – I'm saying the nut flush is out there, or second nut flush, because obviously the straight flush is there. I don't think the person had straight flush. And I think you made the right fold, but you could have saved yourself a bunch of money. How's that?
All right, and then absolutely great. And Killie ends his email by saying, too bad about Columbo. I'll miss him. Thanks, guys. So, one more little thank you out there to our good friend Columbo for what he's done in the past. And, yeah. We'll try to have him on the show if he wants to say goodbye in his own way.
Yeah,
all right. Well, Killie, we're going to try to help you get to the top of that Kilimanjaro here with some wonderful swag. We're going to give you a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games. And, eight-game mixed. That's a mixed game, right?
It is.
So, you can put it to work right away. That comes from our good folks at element26.net. And remind everybody else, send your email to podcast@nannymagazine.com, and you too might win some of this valuable swag.
Well, good luck in the 8-game mix. Hope we primed you enough. Hope we gave you enough stuff to think about. And I hope, Scott, you take it down, buddy. I'm rooting for you.
Aw, shucks. Well, I'm rooting for myself, too.
Yeah, I think people have been giving you enough crap on the show that you deserve a banana. So good luck. And if not, you'll always have your beer. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.